When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, Brian Reese.
Yeah, it's me. I'm Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Happy,
Hi, Brian.
Happy 5,623rd day of quarantine.
Has it been that long? Because it might be.
It might be. You know, what day is today?
I have, you know, it sounds weird to say, but I have spent the better part of 15 years working from home, so not much has really changed for me. It's weird. I mean, I know a lot of people are going through some hard times and trying to readjust to a certain lifestyle, but I've kind of been living that lifestyle. To be an introvert who works from home, I'm kind of made for this.
And that works out well for you.
Yeah.
I'm stuck in the situation where I'm taking our company van to and from work because we're not allowed to take public transportation. We're allowed, but we prefer not. And so, I'm driving this massive ass double long van to and from work every day.
Listeners should know Brian, not the best driver in the world. That's not true.
I'm a lovely driver. I've never been in a wreck.
Yes, no, you are a good driver. It's just you don't do it that often, city boy.
I just have enjoyed living in a city where I did not have to drive for a long stretch of time.
All right.
That's entertaining. That's
it is fun. Entertaining.
If you live in Chicago, watch out.
Yeah.
Because I'm out there.
If you see a van, change lanes immediately.
Yeah, see a big white van riding the right-hand lane. I'm not a left-lane cruiser. I'm a right-lane cruiser.
Why is that van riding in the shoulder the whole time? Okay, well, today on the program, we'll be discussing Squadron Supreme, the 1985 12-issue limited series by Mike Gruenwald, with art by Bob Hall and Paul Ryan. But first, let's talk about all the new comics we're reading. That's where I insert the crickets.
Yes.
So obviously, there's not a whole lot of new comics coming out recently.
But they're coming.
They are coming. So they say.
Allegedly.
I think Marvel just announced, 50 new titles, and they're going to cancel 15 to 20 of them immediately.
Those are limited series, Paul. They just didn't call them limited series.
Yeah, they just launch everything as a limited series with the option to renew. But anyway, this particular situation that we're all in has given us the opportunity to go back and maybe read some things that we have always wanted to get to or wanted to catch up on. And so we're going to talk about a couple of those things that we've been reading. So, Brian, this was your idea. What are you reading? What you reading, Brian?
So, it's been weird. So I think I've mentioned before that I have been attempting to read through the Avengers. And, it was slow going because I had other reading to do. And, I started from the very beginning. So I've managed to, I think, get through about 150 issues of the Avengers.
That's impressive.
Over this time. But one author, there's a million series. There's so much to read out there. I mean, the history of comics and the wealth of things that are out there. And part of me is because I've thought a lot about Grant Morrison, and I feel pretty well read about Grant. But I had to. So one of the things I've thought of over the past couple of months is who is one of his contemporaries that I also adore almost equally as much, and of course that's Warren Ellis, who we haven't done a Warren Ellis yet.
Yes, we have. We've done Moon Knight.
Oh, we did Moon Knight. Okay, that's right. To me, Warren Ellis is very much comparable to Grant Morrison in many ways. They're completely different, yet they are creators who have been working in close to the same time frame and are both writers who have explored kind of big ideas but can also do the old generic superhero comics as needed too. So
also fueled by drugs.
Right. Both are not opposed to using substance to help further their ideas.
Yes. Creative enhancement.
Creative enhancement. So one of the things I've been doing like the past couple of months is just going back and diving into the massive amount of Warren Ellis catalog that's out there. What's really interesting to me is, I mean, he's written for so many different companies, and the big knock on Warren Ellis that versus Grant Morrison is Warren Ellis starts comics and then just never finishes them, which is very frustrating. So, you know, I've gone back, and of course, the first thing I went back and read was Trans Metropolitan, because how prescient is that comic right now?
That is his, what do you want to call it? His epic.
Yes, right. Sort of. And, you know, of course, then I hit Next Wave, Agents of Hate, because that's just so much fun.
Yes.
And because I know Warren Ellis listens to this podcast, Warren, let's get back to some Next Wave.
Spoiler, that might be a recommendation sometime on this program.
It should be.
It's on the long list. I have a notepad full of, you know, and this one, and this one, and this one.
Yeah.
Of all the things I've got to record, and that's, or all the things I'm going to recommend, and that's on there.
But, you know, it's been kind of great going back, and some of the more contemporary things, like Trees, which he's, and Injection, which are more recent things that he allegedly is continuing. And then, you know, going into things like Dr. Sleepless, which was so great. And I can't tell by the last issue whether he finished it or just wandered off.
He's sleepless walking?
Yeah. But there's, you know, I mean, then you get comics like Fell, which he clearly never finished. But there's such a wealth of, like, oddly enough, you know, and he did a lot of the Wildstorm stuff. Mm-hmm. He just came back recently with some Wildstorm stuff, which I thought was really great, but apparently didn't sell, so it's dead in the water, any kind of reboot on any of that stuff. But, you know, there's so many interesting bits of work that he does, and a lot of his work, particularly for the big two, I guess you could say, are, you know, he'll do a three-issue arc of Fantastic Four. He'll do a weird one-off of Iron Man. There's just all this really interesting stuff that he puts out there.
Yeah, he'll do a great six-issue run on Moon Knight.
On Moon Knight, right. Yeah. And then he's off. He's such an intriguing writer, and it's been kind of fun over the past couple months to dig into what I think are a lot of his comics that are sort of smaller in nature. So that's who I've been digging into. I've been continuing on with my Avengers interest. Some of those comics are really terrible. Some of them are really great. And then digging into going back in and digging into Warren Ellis's bibliography.
Wow, that's impressive. Well, just digging into Warren Ellis's bibliography is a undertaking right there.
It is, yeah.
But I admire your commitment to the Avengers, because you're right. It is hit or miss as far as quality is concerned. I really love those old 70s comics, though.
It's the 70s. Like, getting through the 60s was tough. That was really tough. Those aren't good comics.
You have to read it in the mindset of, you know, this was new at the time. These are things that haven't been done before, and it's tedious, and there's way too many words.
But you gotta read it, because otherwise then you don't get the whole Kang the Conqueror and his various personas and timelines if you haven't started from the beginning.
Wow. Kang's timeline is so convoluted. Yeah. Well, for me, I have I've started two series that I've wanted to read for many years, but I just never got around to doing it. One of which is The Spectre, specifically the 90s run by John Ostrander and Tom Mandrake.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because I hadn't, I know of The Spectre and I've read him in other things, but I've never read specifically his comics.
Yeah.
And so I picked up that one was highly recommended. So I've been reading that, and it's good. It's very 90s as far as, you know, it's dark and gritty, and
it's DC
90s. But it's very good. I mean, it's this weird,
incredible artist.
Yes, he is. And it's, you know, it's this weird mixture of horror comic and detective noir crime story. So it's really interesting. And I'll be honest, I didn't know much about the Spectre and his backstory. So it's really, it's entertaining and it's a learning experience at the same time.
So remind me again, is this the Jim Corrigan Spectre?
Yes, it is. So the other series I've been reading, I bet you this is going to surprise the heck out of you. It's Magnus Robot Fighter, specifically the Valiant Run.
About the Dell stuff or the, was it Dell or?
Well, it was Dell and Gold Key.
Oh, right. Dell and Gold Key. Yeah. Right.
But I'm reading the Valiant reboot of it from, was like right at the beginning of Valiant. It was one of Jim Shooter's first, big thing. Like he got the rights to this and he wrote it himself. And it's a really fascinating comic because it's entertaining. It's like this throwback to old sci-fi, that old 50s style sci-fi, but it's actually very progressive in many ways as well, talking about different, identity politics and sexuality. So it's really interesting. And Jim Shooter as a writer, he's an interesting fella. Let's just say.
Well, he had a decent run on Legion back in the day.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mean recent back in the day, but back in the day when he was like 12.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Jim Shooter, what can you say about Jim Shooter?
There's a whole podcast about Jim Shooter out there somewhere.
Yeah. There are people who, because obviously he's done a lot of good things for comics. He's also pissed a lot of people off.
Well, yeah.
So he's a controversial figure. But anyway, this particular series, Magnus Robot Fighter, is actually pretty good. I like it. Eventually, he writes it, and then eventually he steps back from actually writing it and just doing the plots, and David Michelinie steps in, takes over at some point. And Steve Ditko takes up some of the art. Not all the way through, as the series gets established.
Yeah, I was going to say, Steve Ditko doing an entire series, yeah.
But no, it's really fascinating stuff. And to be honest, I had never read any Valiant comics. So,
Valiant's one of those I feel like I missed the boat on. And one of the things, like Valiant, you've got all these great comics, I think are great comics, and a lot of good creators and writers and stuff. But they existed for a while when I wasn't really following, and then they went away, and then they came back, right? And it was I never joined in on the ground floor on it, and have always felt like it's hard to join. It was kind of like Jeff Lemire's Black Hammer stuff for Dark Horse.
Right.
I'm kind of kicking myself because now it's like this whole world.
Oh, there's so many titles now?
Yeah. And oh, my God. And, now it's like, well, how much back reading do I have to do? And maybe that's what I should have spent my time with rather than reading the Avengers or random Warren Ellis comics.
Well, to be honest, I think we got a while to go. So strap in. Just just grab something. Yeah, but as far as Valiant comics, this is good. I've been enjoying this Magnus Robot Fighter because it's fun. And I like that golden age 50s pastiche kind of thing. So that's fun. But then there's a couple of crossovers with Jai. Is it Jai? I don't know how to pronounce it. And Bloodshot. And you're like, oh, God. Oh, right. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know if I want to get into any of those.
Kids are all into the Bloodshot these days,
Well, they had has the big, Valiant movie universe starting now.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So apparently the new Vin Diesel Bloodshot movie is going to be coming out on Netflix soon, and I'm going to wait for it to come there and then ignore it.
Well, now you sound like me with the superhero movies.
Oh, is Bloodshot a superhero though?
I have no idea. Here's our ignorance. Just a note, kids, we don't know every comic ever made.
Doesn't Bloodshot sound like someone like a heavy drinker has to go through his next day?
It sounds like a really great record company out of Chicago that put out some really incredible records for a good while.
Or a Rob Liefeld reject.
Every time I hear Bloodshot, like in terms of comics, for some reason I think of Deadpool. I just
All right, so that's it. That's what we've been reading. Among other things as well. Those were just two of the more obscure things. Also been reading actual
books.
Well, yeah, I do that as well.
You know, without pictures.
So do we have anything else as far as topics are concerned?
That's all I got.
All right. Well, let's take a break and come up with a lively discussion on another pastiche.
On the SS.
On the SS. All right. Back in a few.
I am Connor from the House of Eld.
And I am Ray from the House of Zod.
We are two of the many, many survivors of Krypton's destruction, and we have made our home in Australia, and dare I say, have become Australians, for better or worse. But we have also decided to read Superman comics, read Superman books, watch Superman shows, cartoons, movies, basically everything Superman, and from an Australian perspective as well. Whether you're a seasoned fan, like me,
or whether you are coming in fresh, wide-eyed, and wanting to learn more like me, then this podcast is for you. Join us for our bi-weekly adventures available on all good podcast catchers.
But just search for Last Sons of Krypton, a Superman podcast. We'll be coming to you from Australia or some cosmic dimension, wherever we are that week. Up,
and away!
And we're back! On today's exciting episode of The Collected Edition, we'll be discussing The Squadron Supreme, which was Paul's suggestion. Paul, would you like to share with us some information about The Squadron Supreme?
I sure will. Squadron Supreme was created in 1971 by Roy Thomas and John Buscema as a pastiche of the Justice League. They served mostly as bit players and cameos in the pages of comics like The Avengers and Captain America, but in 1985, writer Mark Gruenwald used the team to explore the ethics of heroism and the morality of superpowers in a 12-issue limited series. In this series, we find the main team, Hyperion, Nighthawk, Power Princess, Whizzer, Dr. Spectrum, and Amphibian, dealing with the aftermath of a global catastrophe caused by mind control and the abuse of ultimate power. And in order to fix this situation, they decide to make the world a better place by using ultimate power and mind control. Disagreements on how to employ this utopia project immediately ensue, leading to the resignation and even the death of certain members. New recruits are brought on board, including former villains. Personalities clash, moral lines are crossed, motivations are questioned, and deception and betrayal abound. And all the while, one question is always asked: do the best of intentions justify an immoral act? Squadron Supreme is a deconstruction of comic book tropes and storytelling, while at the same time telling a very traditional comic book story. It's a loving homage to hero archetypes we've come to adore, but it's not afraid to look into the moral ambiguity that would arise from having that kind of power. Gruenwald, aided by the art of Bob Hall and Paul Ryan, began the exploration into the implications of how superheroes could affect personal freedom and free will, a full year before titles such as The Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen would put a gritty spin on these ideas. And you can bet a young Mark Waid was already taking notes. Gruenwald would eventually call Squadron Supreme his magnum opus, and it's not hard to disagree with him. The story, its ideas and themes would resonate and inspire comics for a long time to come. Brian, what'd you think of Squadron Supreme?
Well, I'm glad you threw out Mark Waid as well in there, because I was like, I wondered if Mark Gruenwald had ever approached Mark Waid about royalties in terms of...
Yeah, there's a little crossover. There's a little crossover in theming.
So this is a weird comic in some ways, and I had mentioned that to you just in passing, just via text, without really any context to it. I think it's a good comic.
I like that. I think it's good.
It was very difficult for me to engage.
Okay, I can see that.
In the characters, if you were to say, who's your favorite character? I don't have one. Is there a character you were particularly rooting for? Not really. And that may be the point.
I think that it is. I think that, you know, because right. none of them are really likable, but no. I think it's trying to point out that these are all, you know, human beings with flaws and failures and you know, and jealousies. And they happen to have, you know, superpowers. So all these flaws, which would be, you know, bad in real life, now get amplified because they're all terrible people. And this kind of thing, this was written a long time ago, and it's, I don't know if it's the first time it's been done, but it's definitely an early story of this kind of an idea of taking the moral ambiguity of superheroes. And of course, this would be used again in things like Watchmen and Kingdom Come and The Boys.
Yeah, and I don't know when Suicide Squad.
Even then, I mean, because they were always, because Suicide Squad was always, they were villains, and that's,
they were villains who were offered amnesty or the possibility of amnesty based on working for the government.
Yeah, so they were kind of forced into being the heroes. These are actual heroes that, you know, they have the best of intentions, but that doesn't always work out the best of ways.
Right, right. And one thing we should, of course, mention right at the bat that I think is obvious to anybody who's read this, but for those who haven't, all of these characters, of course, are, this is the Justice League.
Yes, and they were, so when they were created.
Very intentionally. They weren't trying to be coy. This was Marvel doing the Justice League.
Yes, absolutely. And when they were created back in the early 70s by Thomas and Buscema, that's exactly what they were. They were meant to be a parody. They were meant to be a satire. And you know, in a loving way. These are writers and artists that loved these characters, and they wanted to use them in a story without being sued.
Yeah. So. I mean, you know, both companies have stolen characters. I think Marvel has probably stolen a bit more just because they came later. But, you know, Hyperion is Superman. Nighthawk is Batman. Power Princess is Wonder Woman. Wizard is Flash.
Should we just have about 5 minutes of Wizard jokes?
We could have. And, you know, the fact that there's also a character named Quagmire.
Giggity, giggity.
Yeah, so all of these characters are very intentionally aping sort of the core Justice League. And so, I mean, I think that's important, too, is the knowledge, like we have to, the fact that they are trying to do the Justice League, and is important to the story.
Yes, and I don't think it's done in a nasty or mean way, because Grunwald loved these characters. I mean, right. he said flat out he loved the DC characters and he loved the Justice League. So I don't think he was trying in any way to disparage them, or in a way that, say, a Mark Miller would take those characters and be really mean.
Right.
I think Grunwald was doing it from a place of admiration.
Yes. Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah.
But at the same time, he was. And I agree with you. Okay, I agree with you that this was a very strange story, because he's trying to deconstruct the comic book stories, not deconstruct comic book storytelling. But at the same time, he's telling the most traditional, he's telling it in the most traditional way, almost like a 60s, early 70s kind of way.
Right.
You know, with all the flashbacks and the all the tropes you can think of a Silver Age comic book.
Right.
But he's doing something very modern with it at the same time. And its voice is a little bit disjointed.
Yeah.
But I do, like I said, he's bringing up really valid points. And he's, I think he's trying to be fair to the characters while at the same time saying, you know, things like fascism is bad.
Yes and no. This is not a critique. This is what Grunwald wanted. I don't know Grunwald's personal politics, and you know, the comics gators can go screw themselves with any of that stuff. But I don't completely know what Grunewald specifically is trying to say about some of these various issues that come up in this comic. And we may get to that through our conversation. And I, again, to clarify, I'm not saying that that's bad. That may actually be exactly what he wanted, is for us to, you know, remove the author from the text and allow the text to be what it is. And we, the reader, could draw our own conclusion.
I can say, okay, so I don't know Grunewald's personal politics, and I don't know the man, but I do know his work. And I've read his entire run on Captain America, plus this and several other stories.
I know he's a favorite.
Yeah. And he does lean conservative. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's like, you know, far right or anything like that, but he does have conservative views, like an 80s conservative. I mean, but at the same time, he's also very heavily, especially with his Captain America run, it's personal freedoms, almost libertarian. Maybe we could say that, you know, personal freedoms trump everything. I don't want to use the word Trump. Personal freedoms supersede everything.
Yeah.
So that's what you kind of get in this story. And it is a little disjointed. I will admit that because, okay, so the storyline is simply this. It is Squadron Supreme is essentially the Justice League. They have just gotten past this crisis from a previous story where Nighthawk, the Batman character, was president. Yeah, so he was mind-controlled and mind-controlled all the Squadron Supreme into taking over the world, basically. Now, and I kind of like this aspect.
This is Earth 712.
I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
I think it's Earth 712. So this is not taking place on Earth 616 or whatever.
Oh, no, it is not. It is not the main continuity.
Yeah, this isn't Earth, the regular Marvel universe Earth.
You are correct. It is Earth 712. So it is a different Earth. Yeah, so this is a different, an alternate Marvel continuity. So, yeah, so the Earth had been taken over, and a lot of devastation and calamities have happened, and this is sort of the aftermath of that. I do like the fact that previous stories actually have consequences. Yeah, and yeah, so there's a lot of cleanup going on, where the Squadron Supreme is kind of going around and helping people back on their feet, and people are rightfully distrustful of them. Mm-hmm. Because they were the ones who essentially caused this problem in the first place.
And the government.
What you said. So Hyperion and Power Princess, I keep wanting to call her Princess Power, but Hyperion and Power Princess come up with this idea, this utopia, what they call the Utopian Project, where they will go around and use their superpowers to enforce peace on people. And by doing so, like at one point they attempt to get rid of all guns. I don't know if it's in the world or just in the country.
That's never clear.
Yeah. Now, this is the 80s, so I think it's the United States, but because it's the United States, it's really the world.
Right.
Yeah. So they try to do things like get rid of all the guns and melt them down and then try to have, peaceful replacements and then try to come up with different ways of feeding, you know, making sure no one is homeless and no one is, and everyone is fed. So they do this by force. They constantly talk about giving people the option of doing this. But whenever they disagree,
there's not the option.
Yeah, well, they don't really know what they're talking about. So we're going to do it for them anyway.
Well, there's some interesting ethics and philosophy discuss throughout. I mean, I don't want to jump the gun here, but to later on in our discussion, but yes, there are some ethical sort of, there's some exposition, particularly by Tom Thumb, that is about who has rights and at what point you surrender your rights. And then it's very interesting.
Well, yeah, that's this is where the message gets a little muddled. And I think I gotta think that it's intentionally so. Because at one point, Tom Thumb, who is, he's essentially the Atom loosely, but basically he's the science guy who comes up with all the technology. And one of his big inventions is a mind control helmet, basically, to change people's way of thinking. And so it is taken to every prison and made making all the convicts nonviolent and not want to commit crimes anymore.
Right. It's the behavior modification program, or the BMOD.
The BMOD.
Yeah. So to that point,
that's my rap name, by the way. but anyway, so the prisoners are made to undergo this. This is not voluntary. They make pretense to, we'll ask them if they want to or not.
That needs to be done, because then they're not recognizing. So it's voluntary unless you don't volunteer. And if you don't volunteer, then by not volunteering, then you need to be made to do it, because clearly you are not societally able,
And if you commit a crime, therefore you've gone against the laws and you've given up your right to make decisions at that point, because
that was the big sort of ethical argument that Tom Thumb had made at one point in the comic, when he's talking about, society has a right to modify your behavior because you have surrendered your rights in society by going against society.
Exactly. So, of course, Nighthawk, the Batman analog, he's having none of this. So he immediately quits the group and says, we're not going to enforce things upon people. And then the other standout is Amphibian, who's the Aquaman analog. He goes along with the group, but he's not happy about it. And he keeps voicing his opinion. I love that for a while, the first few issues, there's an ongoing running joke sort of that every time he objects to something, they basically tell him to shut up.
Right.
Yeah, basically.
Because he's Aquaman.
Exactly. Shut up, Aquaman. He does, spoilers, he does peace out halfway through the series because of reasons. We'll get to it. He
destroys everything and buggers off.
Yes, exactly.
And then goes and swims around with the dolphins for the rest of, and then we never see him again.
It's good. I'm glad he's happy. I would swim around with the dolphins too if I had the opportunity.
I think Fred Neil would as well, but yeah, anyway.
So that's Project Utopia, is basically the Squadron Supreme is imposing peace upon people and taking over the government's responsibilities. And they get a lot of resistance. But here's where the message gets muddled, is they're successful.
Oh, they're very successful. And this, the comic is set up. This is a 12-issue comic, and it is set up. This is set up for a year. They're going to do this for a year. And each issue represents a month.
Yeah, and they succeed in what they set out to do, which is kind of weird that I don't know what the message is there.
Well, they succeed. They succeed because part of what they do is, and this is going to sound really antithetical to some of my belief systems, what have you, but personal, but they succeed because they remove any sort of ability for others to have more power than they do.
Exactly.
And so by removing the ability for anybody to challenge them in any sort of way, and a lot of this comes down to, the taking of the guns and things like that, by removing all of that, then as they are the only powered beings in charge, and therefore it is impossible to work against them. And so whatever their will is, they can exercise it on a post.
It's as if they can dictate what the rules will be. And that's what I kind of said in my introduction, which is, do good intentions justify an immoral act? And the comic itself is kind of both ways on this. Because it gives examples of, even though the Utopia Project is succeeding, and there's peace in our time, people are being fed, and prosperity is on the rise. All these things are true. But at the same time, there are people who take these measures that are helping and use them in nefarious ways.
Right.
And we get several different examples of that.
You get some villains who get this behavior modification pro the B-mod. And so one of the things to circle back before I hit that is, so one of the things that the Squadron Supreme does is there is the group that opposes them, the Institute of Evil.
I love that, the Institute of Evil.
I love the Institute of Evil. I love that they have, I love Ape X or Apex. But so one of the groups opposing them, one of the villainous groups opposing them, they are captured by the Squadron Supreme eventually. And this behavior modification program is used on the Institute of Evil, these characters, to force them to become part of the Squadron Supreme. And to me, this is one of the biggest... So what happens to Apex in this, and we don't have to get to it now, but I think is one of the biggest pieces of this comic. So these characters are forced to agree with and not challenge the Squadron Supreme. This B-mod program, they're brainwashed into being good guys.
Exactly. And part of that is little specifications, like you cannot disagree with the Squadron Supreme. You cannot go against what they say, and you have to listen to every order that is given. Now, that seems like a good idea on the surface, since they are, supervillains, but it does hinder their ability to make decisions, and decisions that will help the Suicide Squad, that decisions that will help the Squadron Supreme.
Ultimately, yes.
Ultimately.
And so to circle back then to what you said before, so at some point the monster, what is it, Master Menace, or what is his name?
It is Master Menace.
Yeah, it is Master Menace.
Yeah, Dr. Doom, basically.
It's Dr. Doom. So this guy, Master Menace, eventually gets a hold of this technology and figures out how to reverse engineer the behavior modification to free up or to remove the behavior modifications, to remove the brainwashing. So the bad guy is attempting to unbrainwash people that the good guys have brainwashed.
Yes, and that's where the moral ambiguity comes in here. And the interesting thing about that is, now we're jumping all the way to the end, but the interesting thing about that is a handful of the villains who have been, not a handful, but a couple of the villains that have been modified decide to stay good.
Right.
Because of the experiences that they have, like the Shape, who's essentially Plastic Man.
Mm-hmm.
And
Foxfire. What is
Foxfire?
It?
Foxfire.
Right.
It's Foxfire.
Foxfire.
Foxfire. She is Foxy, and they let you know that over and over.
Over and over and over.
Yeah, there's some sexual politics in this comic that's aged well.
I figured we would touch on some of that at some point too, particularly with the behavior modification in the Golden Arch.
Yes, when we get to Lady Lark, we're gonna have to deal with that. But it is interesting, and I think this ultimately is what Gruenwald's point is that if given the opportunity for free will, people can make, they're able to make their own decision whether to be good or bad. And ultimately, that's what everyone has the right to do. You can't force people to be good, because and eventually it's not going to, it's going to hurt you in the end.
Because if you're forcing people to be good, are they really good?
Exactly.
And what is good? And what is evil?
Exactly. So so there's a lot of moral gray area that's going on here. So let's go all the way back to the beginning and talk about some of the really crucial things that happen. And I guess we can start with Nuke, I suppose.
Sure.
So along the way, several incidents happen with various members of the group, some internal incidents. The first major thing to have happen is the character of Nuke, who's essentially Firestorm. Nuke finds out he's a kid. He's 17 or 18 in the comic. He essentially finds out that his parents have cancer and that he has been emitting radiation, and he's the one who caused them to get cancer, and who are eventually going to be the cause of their death. So he tries to force Tom Thumb into curing cancer, which I think is, you know, it's a big ask.
It is, right.
Yeah, so he tries to get Tom Thumb to cure cancer. When Tom can't, he gets really mad at him. Again, so it's a little bit too much right there. But you know, he's upset. His parents are, you know, his parents die. He starts to get very upset and lashing out. So Dr. Spectrum, the Green Lantern character, goes to talk some sense into him and eventually tries to contain him by putting a bubble around him and suffocating him to death. That was unexpected. I thought, well, that's, I thought maybe he would come back, but no, he definitely kills him.
Yep. The death toll's kind of high on this comic.
I think the creator, Gruenwald especially, but also the artist, felt a little liberated from this because it's not in continuity, and they don't have to adhere to the Marvel "you have to come back from the dead"
right
thing. So, yeah, so he felt free to just, you know, kill people at will, which he does. So that's the first thing to have happen, and Dr. Spectrum faces no consequences for this.
Right.
And this is kind of like but the first...
he feels really bad about it.
He does. And it's going to haunt him for the rest of his life. And
right.
You know. But this is kind of the first crack in the facade of all righteousness. And, you know, because he's a member of their team and he didn't really mean to do it, so we just let him go.
Right.
But if it had been a villain... of course, that villain would have been.
They would have the villain would have gotten the B mod.
Wouldn't have gotten the B mod, exactly. So you can see sort of, you know, the crack in the veneer of this righteous exterior. And then the next thing to have happen is probably, in my mind, the most disturbing.
We're doing the Golden Archer.
We're doing the Golden Archer. So the Golden Archer is in love with Lady Lark, who's essentially the Black Canary.
And you can guess who the Golden Archer is.
Yes, yes, change his color. So Golden Archer asks Lady Lark to marry him. She says, no, man, you're kind of a jerk, which he is.
Right.
But Green Archer can't handle that, so he waits for her to go to sleep, drugs her, uses the B-mod on her to make her fall in love with him. And again, he feels bad about it.
Yep, but that's sexual assault.
Yes. And to her credit, Arcana, which is the Zatanna analog, she does speak up at a meeting and say, he violated her mind. It's the same thing as if he violated her body.
Yes.
And I was like, yes, yes, you are correct, ma'am. So they put it to a vote. Should Green Archer be kicked out of the Squadron Supreme for essentially mind raping a woman? And it just barely passes that he is in fact kicked out of the... yeah, so this one...
Even then, he's kicked out not because of, you know, the aspect of the assault. He's kicked out because, well, he used the B-mod inappropriately.
Exactly. And they don't actually put Lady Lark back to herself again. She's allowed to just leave with him. Well, they say that, but then... it's proven.
The way the B-mod currently works is that you can't revert because it'll destroy the mind.
Which
Master Menace figures out how to reverse engineer later.
Yes.
But, you know, Tom Thumb, the real genius in the world, couldn't figure that out. But some dude named Master Menace could.
Couldn't figure it out or didn't want to figure it out.
Right.
The really disturbing thing is like Lady Lark's all over Golden Archer at this point. And he starts saying, God, you're so needy. You are the biggest prick.
He gets what he wants, and then he's dissatisfied with getting what he wants.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, yeah.
But I do think, as distasteful as this storyline is, it's necessary to the plot because this is the second crack in the veneer where it says, this is how this can go wrong. You think making people only do good, in quotes, is fine, but you can also manipulate them to do things you don't want them to do.
Or, right.
You know, it can backfire on you and it can be used in the wrong ways.
And there doesn't seem to be any concern because a good guy did it, it's okay. except he's not a good guy because what he did is very much, it is not. That was an intellectual statement.
but it is indeed true. So
that was deep.
Yes, well, that's part of the point where if the good guys do it, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
If the bad guys do it, well, then you'll be punished. But who decides who's the good guys and the bad guys? Well, the good guys do, obviously.
Or the only people who currently have the power, like any power.
There are modern day equivalents I could come up with, but let's just keep it to the comic for right now.
Yeah, there's right. We'll keep it as a comic. I think we should. We would be remiss not to note that this comic has some strange contemporary parallels, and maybe if folks haven't already figured that out, reading it, you certainly do see some interesting connections.
There you go.
Current events.
So the next thing to have, the next incident to have happen is, well, we find out that Tom Thumb also has cancer. So that's a bummer. So the next major thing to have happen is Master Menace reaches into an alternate timeline or an alternate dimension and pulls out an alternate version of Hyperion. He then takes the current version of Hyperion and puts him into the negative zone. Then the alternate version of Hyperion ends up who's madly in love with Thundra until he meets Power Princess.
It's not important for folks to know who Thundra is. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it is. Go look up Thundra. I like Thundra a lot. She's great. She's a barbarian woman who carries a chain. Thundra's awesome. But he is desperately, desperately in love with Thundra until he gets here and meets Power Princess and falls in love with her immediately. So much so that he kills the Power Princess's husband so that he can make a move on her. Again, sexual politics, not good in this comic.
No.
I do think it's kind of intentional. He does call her... I saw that. It's like in four panels he calls her... babe, doll, dame. I know. Like all in like the matter of a couple of panels.
Yeah.
Again, another crack in the righteousness of this Squadron Supreme, that they just allow this sort of thing to happen because eventually the real Hyperion does come back and there's a big showdown between the two at the faces of the presidents.
And they're different presidents because this is a different Earth.
They're very close, though. There is a great panel, as far as art's concerned. There is a great panel of Hyperion holding the nose of one of the presidents above his head, about to smash.
He uses the nose.
He uses smash. The nose.
It's weirder too because so it's not like the Squadron Supreme were allowing this to happen because they didn't know. Right. So I think this is one of the stranger ones where this is more a personal failing than a group failing.
Yes.
Because it's the alternate Hyperion who is abusing. And then once they find out, there's some, you know, people are a little cross about the matter.
Yes. But the overarching thing here is that the proper Hyperion ends up killing the alternate Hyperion, mm-hmm. and in doing so, he himself goes blind. But he causes a lot of destruction to do this, right. And the Squadron Supreme covers it up
mm-hmm.
instead of facing any kind of consequences to the damage that he or having to clean up and fix the damage he's done. They cover it up,
right? And then there's what I think is a Grunewald failing a little bit, some of the writing that I don't care for, and which doesn't have anything to do with the moral and ethical aspects being talked about in the comic itself, is that then it's how he writes women, and so eventually Power Princess decides, well, she fell in love with the idea of Hyperion, and even though it was the actual Hyperion, she's now in love with the new Hyperion
because it's essentially the same guy. because they look alike.
Yeah, that and that to me isn't that to me is a writer issue as opposed to just than a more overarching thematic issue with the comic itself. I didn't care for that particular bit of the comic.
I agree with you. Women are not written well in this comic, and the way women are treated is not written well in this comic. There's a couple of moments, like I said, with Arcana, I guess it is, where she has a couple of moments where she stands up and is given some agency, but those are few and far between.
Right.
And that is a failing of this comic for sure. Mm-hmm. Just in general, the writing is a bit disjointed, I think.
A little bit. There's some humorous, unintentional bits. There's one point where a character refers to the four corners of the globe.
Yes.
And then there's a whole other scene where this isn't important to the plot, or, you know, it's part of the plot, but so the Golden Avenger is captured and
Golden Archer, not the Golden Avenger.
Golden Archer, yeah. Captured and there's some time, like, they're trying to scare him with something or another. And one of the characters says, "Well, it's a good thing your pants are already yellow."
I kind of thought that was funny.
His pants are blue.
Well, yeah. I think he was wearing, like, little panties, wasn't he?
Nope. I looked, and it's like he had, like, his shirt was yellow.
Yeah, okay.
But his pants were blue. That's an editor issue, although the four corners of the globe is that's a writer's issue, but...
Again, this is another comic with big ideas that the writing is a little clunky at times.
Yeah.
In expressing those ideas. Yeah. Regardless, the story continues. So now we start moving into the plot against the Squadron Supreme.
Right.
So yeah. So you have Nighthawk, who's now trying to work with Master Menace, and grab some other supervillains to create his own anti-Squadron Supreme. And he attempts to have some of them infiltrate the Squadron so that they can disrupt them from the inside. While I find this incredibly interesting, again, we get into what is the point being expressed here? And maybe you can help me out with this. So they get into the Squadron Supreme. New members are added, which are really double agents.
Right.
And they're working against them from the inside. But they also express the opinion of they're sorry to be doing it because they kind of like what's happening on being a member of the Squadron Supreme. So what is the point of that? That they have, they're trying to undermine what they think is a, let's face it, a fascist government or a fascist regime, but they feel sorry about it because they kind of, once they're inside, they kind of like being on the inside.
Well, because they're all pals now.
Yeah. They play capture the flag, and it's all kinds of fun.
They literally play,
yeah.
You know, and then they ostensibly start liking the people, you know, because they're accepted into a group.
So, do you think that was did that feel intentional to you? Trying to make a point, or was that just?
It's groupthink. Whether Grunwald intended to make a statement about groupthink or not, I couldn't say. But it is, some of that is, you know, basically that.
Yeah, well, I see, you know, I mean, there's, if you want to get down into, like, criticism, there is textual evidence of that, but I don't know if it was author's intent. I guess we're not here to judge author's intent, even though we do it all the time.
Well, it's, no one bit of literary criticism is completely separate from another.
All right. So if that was...
Sometimes author intent actually does matter. Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. So, anyway. But if this was in fact author's intent, it's a good, it's a good satire where it says, you know, here are these people, we're completely against this group, but now we're on the inside of this group and we kind of like it. So we're going to work with them.
Right.
So
some of them do the opposite. And I think part of me feels the only sympathetic character in all of this is Shape.
Oh, I love Shape.
Yeah.
He's a trampoline for children.
Yes. So Shape is he's the Plastic Man, and but he's also mentally disabled.
He has a very childlike demeanor.
Some of the terms used for him would probably not be used today.
Well, the fact that Golden Archer keeps calling Tom Thumb midget is not, would not be acceptable. And he's criticized for doing so.
Right. But Shape is, he's very childlike, and he finds a place and an acceptance working with the Squadron Supreme, particularly the Squadron Supreme's families.
That's an interesting part of the story as well. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and their kids, and, he's been made fun of and has never felt like he fits in anywhere. So this is one of the rare moments where Shape, such a dumb name. Anyway.
I think it's supposed to be a dumb name, but okay.
Yeah,
but Power Princess.
Yeah. But where Shape ends up being maybe, like at the end of all this, the most sympathetic and most redeemable or redeemed character in all of this. I don't think that was intentional, but boy, when I finished this, I said, I think Shape's the only one I like.
Yep. I can agree with that. Yeah. I should point out again. No, I kind of like Apex.
I like Apex.
And part of that is, so when these infiltrators, they're working to undermine the group from the inside. Apex finds out about this, but she, because of her mind programming, she cannot say anything about it. She cannot warn the squad.
Just so we're clear, Apex is the Gorilla Grodd analog in this, and Apex is a female ape in a wheelchair of some sort, some kind of, it's not really a wheelchair, it's like a floaty wheelchair.
It's a hovercraft of some kind.
A hovercraft, yes, comics. So yeah. Unless you're Niles Calder, you're not in a wheelchair, you're in a hovercraft. So, and Apex is the genius of the Institute of Evil. So that was brainwashed. So... Right. Sorry, I just needed to just to give context. So carry on with Apex. So, this to me is like what you're about to say to me is one of the most important parts about this comic.
Yes. So Apex has been, she's had the B mod imposed upon her. And part of that is that she cannot go against the Squadron Supreme, any member of the Squadron Supreme at any time. So when she finds out that these new members are actually double agents, she can't tell anyone about it. And that that contradiction in her brain just makes her snap. She just goes into basically a comatose situation where she can't...
She can't report... So the conflict is she can't report the evil, the conspiracy, but she can't not report the conspiracy.
Right. So because she has to help the... She has to help the squadron, but she can't go against the squadron.
Yeah. And I mean, this is actually good writing,
mm-hmm.
and also artistically, it's very well represented. I don't love the art in this comic. It's fine. It's serviceable.
It's bog standards 80s style comics. It could be in anything really. It's
right with a little Walt Simonson influence, but. But this is one of those instances where I think all of everything that's being done, both visually and in the writing, comes together in a really few panels where you see the conflict in her mind and you understand, like, her mind, because she's been brainwashed and because she's not allowed to distinguish between good and evil, but only allowed to distinguish between Squadron Supreme good, everything else bad. Yeah, like you said, it snaps. Her mind snaps.
And this, I think, is the ultimate point of the whole series, which is when you take away someone's free will, you lose everything. That person loses their agency, and the group that could benefit the most, that the people in charge, are now going to be undermined because of of the restrictions they've put upon people. In my mind, that's what the ultimate point of this. Everyone must have freedom to choose regardless of what their intentions might be. Now, that's a little open-ended,
right?
And there are consequences to that kind of thinking. I'm not trying to make an argument one way or the other. I'm just trying to say, I think Grunewald's point is everyone should have freedom of thought and freedom to act in any way they wish, regardless of what happens. That's humans should have that freedom, mm-hmm. Come what may. That's you could discuss amongst yourselves whether that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Right. And we're not making any statement on our beliefs one way or the other on this. I mean, the folks could probably figure it out.
But we're talking about a comic here. And comics should not be political.
Right.
So in the end, the story all culminates in there's a final betrayal by Nighthawk and his crew, the Master Menace. And just at the point when the Squadron Supreme is about to hand power back to the U.S. government.
With limitations.
With limitations, of course.
With lots of limitations.
But they are going to hand back power, essentially, to the people. This is where I play Bane. Going to give it to you, the people. Yeah, so they're about to get this back, and then Nighthawk springs his plot to take down the Squadron Supreme, and a massive battle ensues. This little battle at the end, in the final issue, it's quite good, I thought.
It is very good.
Yeah. Yeah. And the body count.
It goes on for a long time.
It does go on for a long time, but it's a really good interplay of people using their powers collectively and individually, and bouncing off one another.
Literally in one character's case.
Yeah. One of the characters, Inertia, has the ability to take the movement of one person and put it onto another. So every time Hyperion tries to punch someone, she takes that punch and places it upon Power Princess. Yeah. So she ends up getting beaten to a pulp.
That's actually really great. That's a great power, and that's a great moment.
Yeah, it is. Comics.
That is comic books right there.
Exactly. And there's a lot of moments like that in this battle where their powers are being used the way they're supposed to. And they all are highlighted quite well. Yeah. And again, the body count racks up in this one because some characters do die.
There's seven of them that die.
Yeah. And who is it Foxfire who has the ability to?
To rot.
Right. So Foxfire's power is the ability to rot organic material. She decides to defect again to become a triple agent, as it were. And she goes to Nighthawk and rots his heart, causing him to have a heart attack and die. When this happens, everyone's just kind of floored by this. And the fighting stops.
Now, this is right. And this is after Nighthawk gives his big kind of Randian speech about freedom and how he's going to everything the Squadron Supreme attempted to do, he's going to make sure that's all taken down. And it's
very Fountainheady.
It's very Fountainheady, and it's completely antithetical to everything Squadron Supreme's been doing. So he gives this big speech. He's John Galt or whatever.
Yeah.
And he gives this speech to Hyperion. Then Foxfire comes over and kills him. She rots his heart.
Which is a horrific way to go, you know. Yeah.
And then suddenly it's all over, and Hyperion's like, okay, well, Nighthawk was right, and I'm disbanding Squadron Supreme, and it's the end of the comic.
I'll amend that a little bit. I think just because of that consequence, because of the speech and then the way he died, Hyperion is able to see that, yeah, maybe we haven't gone about things the same way. I don't think he's going to say, we're going to disband it all. He's going to keep things in place, but they're going to take a step back from administering everything.
And to be fair to the Nighthawk speech, there is a little bit in there where he makes the very good point, something we've touched on already. But the point is, like, you've created this where you can be the only arbiters of what is good and what is not, and in the control of the world. And, you know, and he brings up, so you are good, but what if one of you goes bad?
Exactly. And I think that that's been set up throughout the 12 issues so far. Every time you have an incident like Golden Archer or like when Nuke is killed.
Right.
If there's an alternate Hyperion who comes in and for a little while takes over. You know, these things, you can see where everything's great on the surface so long as everything's going right. If you have the Philosopher King, everything's fine. But at the moment you have someone who's not quite 100% good,
right.
You know, it's going to be used incorrectly. Power is going to be used incorrectly. It's going to be abused.
We're not all King Alfred.
Exactly. You know, so I think that was the point at the end where they say, okay, he's right in a certain extent, to a certain extent. So we can use our power for good, but we can't be dictators about it. And then, of course, there's the loving moment where Orcana's child is born. We've been watching the progress.
And Shape is there. Shape saved Orcana.
Exactly. So Orcana's holding the next generation, and it's up to you now, next generation.
Speaking of next generation, again, do you feel like the ending was kind of like a Star Trek The Next Generation type of ending? It's like you have these 11 and 3/4 issues where everything is built up, and then they just reach this point where it's like, oh, well, we have 3 more pages left.
Yes, it is true. It does. Yes, it did feel a bit rushed towards the end.
Sorry.
It's like, oh, I'm sorry. Is this the 12th issue? Quick, do some techno babble and end this and wrap this up. We got to go.
It just felt like the ending was kind of like, you know, oh my God, we got all the way up to the plot just went kind of crazy. And now, and then this thing happens and we're done.
Yes, this could have benefited from maybe a coda to kind of wrap things up and put
it. I think there is a coda.
There is?
Yeah. Didn't Grunewald write, he had another graphic novel that was a sequel to this.
Well, but yes. But as far as this 12-issue run, which was supposed to be standalone,
right.
It could have been, for instance, we did DC's New Frontier.
Right.
And that had a wonderful little ending, you know, an end cap to it, where it sort of summed up everything that, you know, we know what happened to all the characters. We kind of get what the point is. And it felt like a nice, clean ending. This sort of just ends. And now you decide. You know, it's like one of those old 50s movies where, you know, a question mark would come up. The end. Question mark?
Oh, yeah.
But that's essentially the story. I will admit, you know, to restate what you said in the very beginning, this is a weird story. And it's hard to kind of figure. I mean, I can pick out the things that I agree with and that I like and kind of latch onto that. But there's a lot of things that I say, well, I don't really agree with that. I'm not saying that's a bad thing either. Reading something and you're kind of confused by it or you're not 100% behind it, that's good. It makes you think. If nothing else, this comic is making you think.
Yes. And I should clarify that when I said I don't know if this is a good or bad comic, I think it's still an important comic. Partly because of like what you laid out from the beginning is that this came before Watchmen. This came before Kingdom Come. This came before Dark Knight. This came before all of that other stuff.
Yeah. So things like The Boys that we talk about.
Yeah.
This is the predecessor to those kind of things.
It's an important comic. And I think it deserves its place in the canon.
Yes, I agree with that. I hate doing the whole it hasn't aged well thing. Because there are aspects of this that just kind of rub you the wrong way. But at the same time, I don't want to just blow it off and say, well, it was a product of its time. You know, those are two cliched ways of approaching these things.
Well, everything is a product of its time. It's how well it survives the right. time.
That aside, I admire this comic for the things that it's trying to do and the points it's trying to bring up. And there are some pretty moving things in this. We kind of blew off the thing about Tom Thumb having cancer. He actually goes... He time travels into the future to try to find a cure for cancer.
Right.
And he could get it if he betrays Hyperion, which he doesn't do.
Right.
So he does stick to his ethics. And in doing so, condemns himself.
Yeah. But then he goes back into time and steals.
Yeah. So he
comes back and realizes that it doesn't work because of... And well, that's what we're getting.
Yeah, then it's this whole thing about eugenics and
right. Yes, yeah.
That was that got to the end of that issue and just said, "Wow, that's I don't know how to take that exactly. Are you trying to say eugenics is good? We could just have 20 minutes of both of us going, Yes, what we were saying is this comic does deserve its place in the canon. It does deserve to be remembered for the things it was trying to do.
It should be read. Anybody who wants, I'll tell you right now, I had never read Squadron, this comic before you recommended it.
Oh, okay.
I had Squadron Supreme was not a comic that I was really paying much attention to throughout my life. Throughout my comic book reading life. But after reading it, I'm like, how have I not read this before? Because a lot of what happens in here actually does have consequences.
Well,
in Marvel for future issues, for future comics, and for future events. So that's another thing that we should clarify. Things that happen in here have consequences later on in the Marvel universe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though this doesn't occur on the Marvel universe Earth.
Eventually you get things like Secret Wars, and that's going to kind of bring these characters into the main 616 universe.
But Nighthawk, Kyle Richmond and Hyperion are pretty major players in some ways in the Marvel universe going forward.
Yeah, definitely Nighthawk.
And they were actually previously, the one thing we didn't mention is the Defenders and the bit that Nighthawk played. We didn't talk about the Defenders. So there's the things that happen in here, and some of the characters in here are very important to the Marvel Universe going forward.
Yeah, and in a crazy way, the DC Universe, because as we mentioned, we recently read Kingdom Come just a couple months ago. Having read that so recently and now reading this, the parallels are unbelievable.
Yes.
Between the two. This was an influential comic. I read this mostly because I was a Grunewald fan, having read all his Captain America, and then I wanted to read other things by him. So that's where this came up. But again, haven't read it many, many years. So having reread this, it is amazing how many things have kind of branched off of this or taken those ideas and gone a little bit further, made them, a little darker.
Grimmy gritty.
So this is an important comic in the history of comics, but I don't think it's great. In my personal opinion, I don't think it's a great comic. I think it's an important comic. I think it's good to make that distinction.
Yeah.
So I do, and if you haven't read it out there, you should. It's, like I said, it's an important comic. You should read it. And I think it's important to read stuff you don't always agree with.
Yeah.
If nothing else, just to solidify the fact of, knowing why you don't agree with it. But that's it. I think we've run to the end of this particular gambit. I'm losing my mind. I should have things scripted. Like how to end things. I think that's it for this particular episode. Any last things to say on it?
No, Brian? I think we covered, I have pages and pages of notes, but why go back to that?
Okay, well, so what's next on the collector's edition? Yeah, because you're it's your pick next time.
Oh, finally. When was the last time I recommended a comic?
It was a while. No, you did Kree Skull.
Months and months. Well, hopefully I'm starting off well. For our next edition of the collected edition.
You should have things scripted.
So.
Next time on an all new edition of the collected edition.
Right. I'm trying to not say edition twice.
In addition to the neglected edition.
In addition to our addition to the... So, for our next podcast, I am recommending Astro City Volume 1, Life in the Big City, which collects Astro City Volume 1, Issues 1 through 6. We haven't done Astro City yet. I can't believe we haven't done Astro City yet. It is written by Kurt Busiek. It is illustrated by Brent Anderson. And the character design and the covers are done by the great Alex Ross.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Astro City. That was me clapping.
No, I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a good conversation, I think. Been a long time since I've read Astro City. And again, that's the beauty of doing this podcast. We start reading things that we haven't read in a while with a critical eye. We're not just, having to read it for the podcast. You start looking into it a little bit deeper than maybe you typically would.
Yeah. It's not like just trying to burn through your floppies.
Exactly. And if you burn through your floppies, get some penicillin.
Right. Yeah. You got to be very careful about that.
Yeah. It's curable. Select
your floppies carefully. You don't always know where those floppies have been. Wear a face mask. Wear some gloves.
On that note, thanks everybody for listening. Please let us know your feedback, comments at collectededitionpodcast.com, or leave comments on the individual episode on the website, collectededitionpodcast.com, and hit us up on Twitter, collectededpod, that's collectededpod. So that's it. Thanks everybody for listening. Everybody keep reading comics. Talk to you next time.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at @collectededpod. That's collected, EDPOD. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained?